All right, but let me begin first by introducing myself. As I said, my name is James Phelps, and I want to welcome everybody to our October PPS Success Mastery Coaching Call. In addition to being your host today, I'm the Dean of Education for the PPS Success Mastery Program. Before we get started, I want to let you all know that we do record our coaching calls, and you can find the recordings on our website. They're all located on the audio features page of our Food for Thought section on the site.
Okay.
So I invite you all to visit us there and have a listen to our previous calls or to come back in a few days and revisit this call. To begin our call today, Paul is going to talk about why change is so hard and the relationship between body, mind, and spirit in self-realization. And after about 15 minutes or so, we'll open it up for any questions you all might have, whether they're about making changes in your life or anything else. Finally, because we are recording this call, if you happen to be in a high-traffic area or you're on a cell phone or voice over IP, you can mute your line to prevent any noises by pressing *6 on your phone. If you want to jump into the conversation, you can reopen your line at any time by pressing any button on your phone pad. So with all that stuff out of the way, let me turn things over to Paul.
Hello, everybody. James, can you hear me okay?
Yeah, you're a little muted, but I can hear you.
Okay, well, I'm going to have to get myself a new phone here in this flat. But here I am calling from Eastbourne, England, and today our topic is being confused. Sorry, I can hear someone talking in the background there. The topic is, why is change so hard, the relationship between body, mind, and spirit in self-realization? So what I'm going to do right now is just overview why change feels so hard for most people. I called this talk, Why Change is So Hard, the Relationship Between Body, Mind, and Spirit in Self-Realization, because we can really never escape the intimate relationship that body has with mind and that mind has with spirit. So in order to truly understand why it's hard for people to change, we have to understand the architecture of the human being within existence. So let's start at the top, since in many ways our existence is what we call in some philosophical circles a top-down reality. The term top-down reality means if you believe in God, then God created everything. If you don't believe in God, it means that something beyond our own comprehension created everything. A bottom-up approach to life is what would be called a Gnostic approach, or a belief that we've got to, that we kind of grew out of the ground and we've got to find our way out of here. This is hell and you're trying to get to heaven. So I'm going to take the top-down approach. Okay, which would be in line with the philosophy of Plotinus, if you're familiar with philosophy, for those of you that are listening. So first of all, we have to understand what spirit is. Spirit is sort of a word that's thrown around in religion and metaphysics and has many different meanings because it's used many different ways in many people. What I want to do is make sure everyone understands what I mean when I use the word spirit. Now, the creation of the universe has to be attributed to something. If you're an atheist, it can be attributed to an accident, or you can just leave that blank. You can just say, I don't know what happened. If you're Christian, it would be God. If you're a Muslim, it's Allah. If you're Chinese, it might be Wu Qi. But essentially, we'll just use the absolute, because that's a mathematical term, and as a mathematical term, or just as a dictionary meaning, the absolute means that it contains everything. So it's capital A-L-L. Everything that could possibly exist is present within the absolute. As the absolute, because it contains everything, it essentially can't move. To move is to go somewhere, which means that there's something. So the instant that you're moving, you've already entered into mind. time does not exist in the absolute, because all the time that is, ever was, ever will be is already there at one time. This is what's called vertical time. Now, the absolute is essentially absolutely full and absolutely empty at the same time. The reason is because fullness is an idea within the absolute, and so is emptiness. So the emptiness idea within the absolute is the absolute void. The fullness idea of the absolute simply means that the absolute is so full, it's literally exploding of itself. It's pregnant. It's literally pregnant and giving birth constantly at the same time, yet it's being impregnated at the same time. So that is the origin of mind. To the degree that any idea exists within the idea of the relative, so inside the idea of the absolute, which contains all ideas, is the idea of the relative. And the relative means that there's always something other. So you don't know what fast is until you know what slower is. You don't know what hot is until you know what cooler is. You don't know what love is until you know what not love is. That's the origin of mind and spirit. The term spirit is essentially what is the name that signifies the movement of all things into the divine or into the absolute. Because the absolute is a void. So what is called spirit is composed of the desire of the absolute. Again, the term desire exists as an idea in the relative. So in the absolute, you have absolute desire, which means an absolute vacuum. So when absolute desire sucks everything into it, it has to push itself out, because to be absolute, it has to stay perfectly still. It has to contain everything. Therefore, it ejects everything out that it pulls it in as fast as it pulls it in, and it does it so fast there's no perceptible or measurable change. So the drawing in force of desire is the equivalent of yin or female, wet, receptive, or womb, and the pushing out of the absolute is the equivalent of will or yang or male or projection or fiery, hot, and destructive. The female yin coupled to the masculine yang or will together as one functional unit is what creates spirit. So spirit is the constant inflow of all that is and the constant outflow of all that is. It is spirit that is equivalent to mind, because without an inflow and an outflow, there can be no movement. In Eastern philosophy, mind is referred to as maya, as illusion. And the reason is because mind is a projection from the absolute that only exists because the absolute exists, but is not real, because the origin of it is no thing. You can only have something at the level of mind, because something can be counted. And if you can count something, then it's not absolute, it's relative. So this constant interchange of no thing becoming something, and as you all surely know, that everything created has a shelf life. Steel rusts, rocks wear down, planet age. Every single thing, even a diamond, has a shelf life. So all things created essentially dissolve into no thing. So this is the recycling of the energy of the absolute. It's a closed system. But within the closed system is the idea of the relative, which produces mind. So now mind is essentially the home of an idea. Where you have an idea, you have mind. When a child is born, it has no ideas of its own. It's born with a mental tabula rasa. It's empty. All the ideas it has, such as finding the mother's nipple, are biologically genetically induce their what's called instinctual knowledge. So it's the animal knowledge that comes with the subconscious or the history of the creation of the biological body, which all things with DNA carry within them. If you're sitting at the table and you say to somebody, please pass me the ketchup, or could I please have a coffee? For everything that you've just said, please pass me the ketchup, you have particularized the absolute. So when you say pass me the ketchup, somebody's not going to reach for the salt. Because in mind is idea, and in idea you bring the wave function. So in quantum physics, we speak of particles and waves. If you know where the particle is, you can't know its speed because that's a function of the wave. If you know the speed, you can't know where it is because the location is the particle. So if you're measuring the speed, you can't see the particle. So what you see here is that whenever you can talk about something or know something, a car, a house, a watch, a ring, you're dealing with something that's particular. You've symbolized it. My name is Paul Chet. That means I'm not Paul Smith. That's the function of mind. Mind essentially takes the absolute and breaks it into pieces. Consciousness is what you know of as the ability to identify anything within mind. If you weren't conscious, you could not say, pass me the ketchup. If you weren't conscious, you wouldn't know the difference between ketchup and salt. Now back to the beginning of your life. You were born as a child with no ideas. You didn't know what ketchup was. You didn't know what salt was. You didn't know what a Tonka truck was or a Barbie doll was. These are all ideas. The child learns through mimicry how to couple the sounds of words, movements, behaviors, and emotions with the ideas that are associated with them as taught by the parents and siblings, society, and culture.
That he's something out the kitchen with the food bowl.
The body is the interface through which you experience and express the ideas of mind
and
spirit. Spirit is the equivalent of a wave function, which you know of as life force. So like I said to my students on my earlier call today, if you want to experience life force, just hold your breath as long as you can, and you'll shortly after around 60 seconds, you'll feel this incredible desire to breathe. And that's because life force moves through you, and the function of breathing creates prana, chi, or life force through which you are able to activate mind. Why it is so hard to change is because our ideas, our main operational software, first and foremost, is not of our own creation. It is our parents' creation. It is our brothers and sisters' creation. It is our school teachers' creation. It is our lawmakers' creation. It is the creation of our religion, our chosen religion. It is the creation of our society. For example, an American's idea of a small car is the equivalent of the idea of a large car here in England. So what an American calls a small car would probably make most people from England or Europe laugh, because what an American thinks of as a small car is only relative to the idea programmed into an American by American auto manufacturers. The body itself is the vehicle of expression of mind. So when the body is alive and breathing, spirit moves through it. Spirit is reflected in the breathing. Inhalation is male, yang, fiery, hot. Oxygen stimulates and creates metabolism in the body. Exhalation is the equivalent of yin, or female. So you have this constant oscillation of breathing, yin and yang, with ideas, and all ideas are either predominantly yin or predominantly yang. The body, the interface with the mind, gets in the way of change for many reasons. First and foremost, the only way the human being knows that they're thinking is through emotion. The word emotion means E, energy, motion, moving, moving energy, or life. Each of your hormones carries an emotional component. So to the degree that you're nervous, you have elevated testosterone and various catecholamines, adrenaline, and these things give characteristic experiences that are coupled to the idea of stress. To the degree that you're feeling good, happy, serene, you may have elevated levels of serotonin, growth hormone, DHEA, etc. So there's two primary reasons that we have a hard time changing. One, most of our ideas, research shows that most of the ideas that the average person uses were implanted in their head by the age of 12. Only about 1% of the population moved beyond the development of the nervous system and the mind at age 12. So your ideas about safety, security, sex, and sexuality, a lot of these things were imprinted into you by age 12. To the degree that they serve you, you don't need to change. To the degree that you're not served by them, then you will feel the pressure and the emotion that goes with living in a way that isn't serving your needs. Yet oftentimes people feel that internal pressure and they can't seem to get the motivation to change. The reason is most people's diet and lifestyle are reflective of their mind. So the way your parents lived is very commonly, to a large degree, the way you live. Your idea of how many cars you need, how much money you need in the bank, what is a good food, what isn't a good food. Is it okay to use medical drugs, or is it not okay? So your ideas actually create the operational software that runs the body. And to the degree that the body is out of balance, it holds the mind equally out of balance, because the mind has to express itself through the body. And even if the mind contains thoughts of happiness, if the body itself is sick and cannot produce happy chemicals, when someone tells you to smile or get over it or change your perspective, you don't have chemicals to change perspective or to activate the happy thoughts as a physical experience, then these just become ideas that people talk about, but they never seem to be able to manifest in you. So the secret to change is to, one, identify those ideas that do not serve your dream or your core values. And once you identify them, replace them by simply writing down the ideas that you do want. Then, make sure that you are willing to commit yourself to having enough time to change your body so it's in line with your ideas. For example, the worse your posture is, the more unable you are to change the body. And the more unable you are to change the body, the more unable you are to change the mind, because the mind represents itself in the body. So poor posture creates a rigid body, and a rigid body creates a rigid mind, which is exactly why yogis spend so much time keeping their bodies flexible, because they know the body is essentially the mind of the ego. You must also feed the body healthfully. To the degree that the hormonal system is out of balance, which is represented in the men by excessive sex drive or lack of sex drive, poor sexual performance or normal sexual performance. It's inability to orgasm or normal ability to orgasm. Ability to maintain peak states and achieve peak states, or not achieve and not maintain peak states. The ability to accept new ideas and change, or the inability to accept new ideas and change. The constant state of fear and anxiety and tension, or frequent states of peace and union. But to the degree that the body is unable to flow with the mind, the individual again is stuck. They have the ideas, and then I talk to them as clients, and they say, well, I've been trying to change my diet for a year, but I keep on slipping back to my old way. This is because the body won't support the new idea if the new idea is not supported with changes that allow the body to adapt to the new idea. So in conclusion, spirit is the equivalent of a wave function and life force flow. It's what allows you to experience time in linear sequence. It does that through mind. Mind is spirit presented as ego and idea. Body is the vehicle of expression, but because the body is a receptacle of mind, but not mind itself, the body always expresses itself 100% accurately as a representation physically of the ideas that are held true within that individual. So to the degree that change is hard, it almost always comes from either overcommitment to other people's ideas and or not realizing that in order to change your mind, you must be able to keep the body healthy enough and flexible enough to be adaptable to the changes that you're trying to make at the level of mind. So, for example, you can have a great idea about hiking Mount Rainier, but if you're physically out of shape, you're only going to make it about half a mile up the trail, and then you're going to either vomit or have to sit there and camp out overnight until you can get fit enough to make another jaunt. So the body always has to be brought to a level to be able to support the new ideas from mind. So in the Mastery Program, I carefully guide you through how to identify your own ideas relative to your parents and society's and family's ideas and religion's ideas. And then I show you the relationship between diet and lifestyle and mind. And by having your dream and establishing your core values and understanding how the mind works and understanding the importance of caring for the body, you can work on this at the level of spirit, your relationship to something bigger than yourself, your relationship to mind, understanding what ideas are and how to program your own biological computer, and then finally caring for the body so that it can adapt to any new idea and express it. And to the degree that you're flexible in body, you're flexible in mind. To the degree that you're healthy in body, you are healthy in mind. Only when you have body, mind, and soul alignment have you truly reached your human potential. Until then, your dreams and your ideals often just remain ideas. I'd love to spend a couple minutes answering questions if anybody has them.
Paul, I have a question for you.
Excellent. Who am I talking to?
You're talking to Danny Ahern. I'm calling you from New York.
Right on. Danny, how can I help you?
I'm basically, the way you've come to these belief patterns, these thinking processes through evaluating, I mean, did you delve into Oriental philosophy and just philosophy in general, the core stuff, the root things in philosophy, and then is that where you've come to these conclusions?
Well, I've been studying philosophy, religion, philosophy of religion, mm-hmm. science, mythology, metaphysics, and the body for my whole career. Mm-hmm. So while I might study philosophy as an independent study, so say I crack a philosophy book tonight, what I always do is I look to see how that philosophical ideology plays out in reality. In other words, does it work with my patients? Does it work in my own life? So the ideas that I'm expressing through the entire Mastery Program are a compendium of the ideas that I have found through a study of Eastern and Western philosophy, Eastern and Western religion, and everything related to health, that I can actually see and apply as a working system. The rest of it I just throw away because it's either overly philosophical or overly theoretical, etc.
Yes, Paul. This is Kennedy Kinghorn calling from Seattle, Washington. I'm a Czech practitioner, level 2.
Right on. Good man.
My question is, what do you find is the single most or the best motivational tool to help people get away from leading inauthentic lives?
Well, the most powerful tool that there is what I put in Lesson 1 of the Mastery Program, which is why it's there, because the whole Mastery Program is literally about creating the life that you want to live and the lifestyle that you want to live, not what someone else wants or someone else dictates to you. So in Lesson 1, I make it very, very clear that the first thing you've got to do is identify what I call your legacy or your overarching dream. In other words, if you were to die tomorrow, what would you want people to say was what you offered to humanity? Who were you? What was the gift that you left behind? A lot of people don't know that. So in absence of a legacy, I said, well, what would be a dream that you are willing to make changes for? What's something bigger than you? And it might be, well, I want my kids to go to college and have a good education. So I would ask my patient or my client, well, are you willing to make the following changes in your diet, in your lifestyle, whatever it is that is needed for them to go ahead and execute their legacy or their dream? Because many people don't know their legacy, and a lot of them really aren't even sure of what their dreams are, the most important thing you can do is identify what are called core values. The core values are things like, how much money do you need to live the life you want to live? Where do you want to live? Do you want to live in Hawaii, or do you want to live in Alaska? Do you want it warm? Do you want it cold? Do you want seasons? What kind of people do you want to work with? How much responsibility are you willing to take on relative to the amount of income you want to make? And is it realistic? For example, if someone tells me I want to make $100,000 a year, the first thing I want to know is, well, how much responsibility do you want? Because almost everyone that makes $100,000 a year or more has a tremendous amount of responsibility. And lo and behold, what I find is most of the people that want to make $100,000 a year or more don't want the responsibility that naturally comes with that level of income. So I say that's not impossible to do, but you're going to have to become an Alex Gray or a famous musician or somebody that can basically set their own hours and do their own thing. I made over $100,000 a year as a clinical massage therapist, and I chose that profession because I could set my own hours and do what I wanted to do. So that it is possible to do that. But you see, the point is, in order for me to make $100,000 a year as a massage therapist, I had to be very clear about my core values. And one of the core values had to be I was willing to work for it. So I was working about 65 hours a week. But that was okay with my core values. So Lesson 1 essentially guides the individual through the process of recognizing what their legacy is and getting clear on their core values. And that is how I establish motive for change with anybody, even students in the Mastery Program, because you're not ever going to want to do the work, for example, to get through Lesson 2, where I teach you how the mind is programmed, how to identify your own programming, and then how to replace the ideas that aren't serving you with ones that do, unless you have motive through core values, because the fact is it's extremely hard to change ideas, and the longer they are The longer they've been alive in any individual, the harder they are to change, because from the simple principles of physiology, each time you express an idea, you essentially run energy through neurological circuits. And each time you run energy through a neurological circuit, you facilitate the pathway. So, for example, the idea that God is love, every time you think it, it gets easier to think that way until you just walk around and you don't even think it anymore, you know it. And then if someone comes along and says to you, well, God isn't love, God's a mean, nasty warrior, it takes a heck of a lot more energy to think that God's a mean, nasty warrior than it does to think God is love, because the idea that God is love is well established neurologically. So it's kind of like teaching somebody a new exercise. If they've been exercising incorrectly, and you have to teach them the same exercise correctly, it's a lot harder to teach them that exercise than if they've never done the exercise before, because within a few minutes you can teach someone how to do it right the first time. But if they've got bad habits, as I'm sure you know, it's very hard to change those habits. And that truth is not only a physical reality, but a mental, emotional reality. Does that answer it for you?
Absolutely. That was great. It's referred to more or less like a motor program, but it's more of a mental conditioning program. But, yes.
And there's no difference. All right. Motor programs begin as mental programs, don't they?
Yes. Mm-hmm. That was really
right. If I say do a squat, you have to have the idea of what a squat is, don't you?
Right.
The idea of a squat emanates from what is technically called the noosphere in metaphysical terminology. The noosphere is the sphere of mind. So the whole universe is created in layers. The highest layer is the theosphere, or the divine sphere, which creates the noosphere, which is where time and mind emerge, which creates the physiosphere, which makes the universe, out of which emerges the biosphere. So the biosphere and what we are, our bodies, our human bodies, are biological realities, and they're sandwiched right between the noosphere, or mind, and the physiosphere, or rock, planet, moon, star. So really, in order for us as biological realities to change, we have to bring the physiosphere, or the physical reality, in line with the mental reality of the noosphere, and choice is what allows you to choose what is or isn't alignment for you as an individual. Core values and your legacy or your dream is essentially a commitment to a given choice. If you don't have choice, you don't have motive. Are there any other questions?
Hey, Paul. This is Matt from Buffalo.
Hello, Matt. How can I help you?
I'm a massage therapist and a trainer, and I'm going to be doing your HLC 1 program with Emma in Toronto. And I guess I was wondering is that how do you approach individuals that I guess some of the more esoteric parts of your program, if you find resistance from them, how do you incorporate some of those important fundamentals, even some of the Qigong and things like that, when you're getting resistance from a client?
When in Rome, act like a Roman.
You have to kind of walk the walk and preach the same way.
It means you'll always do better if you speak the same language. If you show up in France and try to order in a restaurant speaking English, you'll get ignored. But if you speak even shitty French, they respect you, or at least trying to fit into their culture.
Sure.
So if you're speaking to a Christian, it's a really bad idea to start talking about Allah. If you're speaking to a Muslim, it's a real bad idea to talk about Jesus. if you're speaking to an atheist, it's not a great idea to talk about Allah or Jesus. They're much more interested in mathematical or Newtonian approaches. There's an old saying in metaphysics, God always meets you at your own level. Everybody has wants, everybody has needs, everybody has desires, and a lot of people have dreams. So, for example, if I've got an atheist who's having some problems that I can see are clearly metaphysical, but I know he's not ready or she's not ready to take that approach yet, then I want to know what is important to them. So I might say, well, what's important to you? And they might say, well, you know what I'd really like to do is put 20 yards on my drive at the golf course. Presto, I've just found their God.
To find whatever the appropriate avenue.
What's that?
So I said you got to find their appropriate avenue and kind of work within that.
Exactly. You've always got to find out what God is to them. And all that means is, what is bigger than they are? If you look at the research done by L. Ron Hubbard, which is talked about in the book Dianetics and also in his book Science of Mind, one of the things that L. Ron Hubbard's research showed was that many young men that were drafted into the military were what were considered village idiots. In other words, if you went back to their hometown and spoke to their school teachers, spoke to people that they'd worked for, many of them were considered social misfits and were not projected to become anything much more than a garbage man or a, you know, just a, you know, they weren't really idealized as future mayors or presidents of corporations. Yet, L. Ron Hubbard showed over and over again that when these guys got into a battlefield and found a cause that was bigger than them, for example, national security, or surviving the war to get home to the war that they loved, or to see their family, or to get back to their farm, which they dearly loved. L. Ron Hubbard identified that in every case where one of these young men was able to adopt an ideology that was bigger than they perceived themselves to be, in other words, they were living for something or someone else, that they were able to override all of their inherent weaknesses, such as showing up late, such as doing a mediocre job, such as being afraid when the call of duty was to stand up and face the enemy. So clearly the research in psychology supports that if you can't change for yourself, then you need a motive bigger than you.
Right.
So the answer to your question is always find out what somebody is willing to do above and beyond themselves. Because the fact of the matter is, most people aren't spiritually inclined to change for themselves. And for reasons that are far too complex for this call, their programming has what are called defense means in it that actually stops them from changing for the better.
Sure.
Which is discussed in Lesson 2 of the Master Program.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
I hope you can put it to work. Try it out tomorrow.
Definitely. Right now I will.
Good man. All right. Any other last-minute questions before I hang up here?
Hello, Paul?
Yeah.
This is Emre from Toronto. I have a question
about...
Your
first name?
Sorry?
You tell me your first name again?
Emre, E-M-R-E.
Emre?
Yes.
Okay, good. How can I help you, Emre?
What are your thoughts about fasting?
Oh, sorry. What are my thoughts about what?
Yeah, what are your thoughts on fasting? It's like cutting eating and drinking from the sunrise to sunset and trying to clean the
fasting.
Yes.
Is that what you said? What are my thoughts on fasting?
Yes.
Oh, my thoughts on fasting are you should never do it unless you're healthy. If you fast, first of all, any time that you fast, the first thing that you have to do to keep your biological systems running is you start metabolizing your own fat. Fat in the human body and in all animal bodies is where toxins are stored when the detoxification systems are either malnourished or overloaded and cannot clean the body effectively. The other thing that happens is when you fast, you go into gluconeogenesis and start eating up your own muscle tissue so that you can keep your organ systems and your glandular systems alive. So what happens to people that fast when they're not healthy is it forces their body to metabolize toxins such as pesticides, herbicides, rodenticides, and fungicides that have been brought in on their foods. And most people are eating predominantly commercially raised foods, and most people are very toxic inside. And if you fast and you have to process those chemicals and you don't have a fully functional cytochrome P448 and P450 pathway in your liver, those two pathways are what take fat-soluble chemicals and convert them into water-soluble chemicals so you can remove them from the body through the sweat, through the breath, through urine, and through the feces. So as soon as somebody starts to fast without being healthy, inevitably they end up releasing incomplete chemical transfers into the body, which is shown to cause tremendous damage to the liver and to all the tissues of the body, and it's very similar to free radical damage. So while fasting is popular in some traditions, most of the traditions that fasting was popular in, for example, Judaism, emerged during a period of time when they weren't poisoning the planet so heavily. Now, you can have some very spiritual experiences fasting. You can have tremendous mental openings and clarity. But today, you can also have the opposite effect. You can have the effect of a tremendous spiritual experience because you're dying. So the answer in a nutshell is don't fast unless you're healthy or you're being guided by somebody that really knows what they're doing. So if I was going to put somebody on a fast who wasn't healthy, I would also make sure that part of the fast included the nutrients necessary to normalize the function of their detoxification systems. Otherwise, I'd just be traumatizing them.
Thank you very much for the answer.
Do you understand it?
Yes, it's very clear.
It's important. Thank you for asking the question.
Thank you.
All right, unless there's any more questions, I better close the call out. We're 15 minutes overtime, which is fine as long as people have legitimate questions. And I'll give you one more chance. Does anyone have a question? All right, James, I think we had a fantastic call today.
We did. It was a great call and lots of fantastic participation. And I will remind
you, everyone, for calling in.
Yep, and I'll remind everybody that we hold these calls monthly, so if you think of a question later or you have a question that you in mind right now but we don't have time for it, you can certainly join us next month and ask a question then.
Thank you, James.
And I'd like to just close by saying that the questions today are all addressed in Lesson 1 and Lesson 2. So every question that we talked about today, for anybody that completes Lesson 1 and 2, they'll not only get the answers to those questions, but much, much more.
And I'll also say that if you happen to think of a question and you'd like a quicker answer than next month, please feel free to email me, James, at Dean, D-E-A-N, at ppssuccess.com, and I'll be happy to get an answer for you.
So, James, just to be clear, your email address that you're giving them, could you state exactly the email address again?
Sure. It's Dean, D-E-A-N, at ppssuccess.com.
Good. I thought you said it was James at Dean at ppssuccess.com.
Oh, no. No, dean@ppssuccess.com.
Good. All right. That's dean@ppssuccess.com. Thank you, James, and thank you, everyone. Enjoy the rest of your day wherever you're at, and I'll look forward to speaking to you in the near future as your dreams unfold.
Till next time, Paul.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks very much. Take care.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.